Hello and welcome to the Hardball Gets AFL Show's Good Chat. I'm Eliza Riley, stepping in this week for Chris Robinson. We have a very special guest in the lead up to Derby 53, one half of the Best on Ground medal, inaugural West Coast captain Ross Glendenning. Of course, today's program is brought to you, as always, by Mazda and the brand new Mazda BT50, the complete package. Enjoy. Welcome to Hardball Gets, the great Ross Glendenning, obviously Derby medal named after him. We'll get to that a bit later with the game being on Sunday this week, but I want to go back to the early days, Ross. Like, obviously your dad, Gus, played a few games for the Royals back in the Waffle, but how did you get into footy? I'm imagining he probably had a fair bit of influence on that.
Eliza, yes, and great to be on Hardball Gets, I think with the history there with Dad particularly, not that he pushed it that hard, but I always had an interest in footy. I don't recall seeing him play that much because he retired reasonably early through some knee injuries. But at school, Eliza, and in the street at home, in the Warsilvers home area in Floreat, I went to Jollymont Primary School. He always played footy in winter, cricket in summer, out in the street, on the back front yard, trying to kick the footy over the house from the backyard to the front yard, all that sort of thing. So it was pretty ingrained from an early age. So it was a pretty natural pathway, if you like.
And then, so obviously yourself following Dad's footsteps and joining the Royals in 74, spending a couple of years there. And, you know, we hear about the great Waffle years and the talent that came out of that league. What was it like for you sort of coming into it and joining it as a young kid?
Well, I apologise, I should have followed through with it, but that's certainly the, we lived where we were in Florida. It was actually aligned to Claremont in terms of the zoning, but because Dad did play at East Perth, I had the chance to go there, and because as in my earlier days, primary school, et cetera, we would go to the footy with Dad and watch East Perth. He was able to take me to the rooms and have those sorts of childhood experiences, meeting the likes of Derek Chadwick and Ken McCauley, Malcolm Brown, you know, even the likes of a Jack Sheedy. So it was very historical for me, and it was a pretty straightforward decision. Claremont, certainly in the juniors where I played most of my junior footy, were pretty strong, but East Perth was always the strong pull, and the Royals gave me a great foundation to set my career alight.
And so how did North Melbourne come into the frame? And, you know, we'll come back to this a bit later, but obviously it wasn't the smoothest transition over there because East Perth actually blocked your clearance and you ended up missing 6 odd months of footy for the Kangaroos.
Yeah, look, I did, Eliza, but the background there very quickly was that in about my third year at East Perth, a couple of the VFL clubs at the time had contacted Mum and Dad and said, look, we're interested in chatting to your son about a possible move to Melbourne for the VFL. And I'd certainly been a very keen watcher of any VFL footy you might have seen on TV, Eliza, particularly through the Winners. That was just a cracking program for promoting footy generally. And so we had a couple of calls, one from Richmond, from Graham Richmond, who was the chairman or president at the time, and also South Melbourne, where a second cousin of mine, Ian Thompson, formerly East Perth, played for South Melbourne. And then North Melbourne, through David Robin, Alan Aylett, who was the chairman at the time, they also contacted Mum and Dad. So there was that sort of interest at a time when, Eliza, I suppose there were Form 4s and the ability to actually go to the club of choice, if you like, in Melbourne. With the chats that we had with those three clubs, North Melbourne were just super impressive with how they would look after any interstate player and or his family and allow them to nestle into the club at Arden Street. Not that the other two weren't, but North just had a greater family feel about it. I know Dad was impressed, and I think the hardest person to impress, Eliza, was Mum, because I have two sisters, didn't have a brother, and they, you know, she was thinking, well, what's her son going to do in Melbourne on his own? So she was worried about her son leaving home, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
And so how back in those days did they sort of notice talent coming through the likes of the Waffle and Stateleys? Because it's, you know, it's so different from today. There's no draft, massive analysis and everything. How do you reckon you sort of got on their radar?
I think in for each VFL club at the time, there was a scout or two based in each state, just doing their job in terms of scouting particular talent. I mean, some recruiting guys that are still around have been around, for 40-odd years, and that's just been their role, whether it's been part-time or full-time. So there's always a connection that those clubs had, and then if they did hear about two or three players from WA or South Australia or the like, then the footy manager or the coach maybe would travel to those games when possible and watch those particular players live. So that's essentially how it happened. And then we did get a trip or two, I think there's two, Eliza, to Melbourne, where I was able to train with the group as a prospect, if you like, and just see how I adjusted to the conditions and the training regime and how I may have fit into the club. So it was certainly, you're right, it was certainly far more simplistic, but there was obviously less of it, less recruiting done. There was probably one or two players a year to a club or across the board. And, of course, there was less clubs, Eliza, as well, because they were all based in Melbourne.
Exactly. And so, obviously, this was all sort of happening around 1977. You tried to get over to North Melbourne, didn't get the clearance from East Perth. North Melbourne go on to win the flag that year in a replay grand final. Are you bitter about that, missing the chance?
77, that's a long time ago, Eliza. You probably wouldn't be familiar with that at all. It's a memory that I'm not bitter about whatsoever. The timing just happened to be what it was. We agreed to go to Melbourne for the 77 season, left in late 76, drove across the Nullarbor, parked myself in Melbourne, trained, and then the clearance wasn't a wrangle, but the discussions didn't open up as quickly as we thought they might, and then they just played out until the middle of the year. And East Perth were quite right. If we were in East Perth shoes, we'd probably say the same thing, that we've invested a bit of time in this young player that we'd like to keep, and we didn't agree with what the offer that was coming from North Melbourne. So if you choose to stay in Melbourne, then you're not going to be able to play with either North Melbourne until you come back and fill out some more time at East Perth. So you're right, I missed playing in a, but who knows whether I would have been selected, Eliza. That's the thing. And it's a fact, and it's exactly how I feel. I'm not assuming for 1 minute that I may have been picked in the 77 team for North Melbourne. But then I had the great opportunity in 78 when the clearance things all happened. And to be brutally honest, and I've said this quite honestly on a number of occasions, that then getting cleared for 78, having come back and played the second part of the year of the Waffle season in 77 to allow that clearance, my experience in being at North Melbourne through the early part of 77 allowed me to go back then in 78 and feel super comfortable where Karen and I got married. I drove across the Nullarbor again for our honeymoon, which was a different experience. Kerry always recalls how good that honeymoon was. So Club Med Madura, Club Med Sejuna, Club Med Mount Gambier, some wonderful places along the way. And then we settled in very quickly into the Melbourne lifestyle, particularly knowing also that you're going to be able to play. So I think in a reverse way, it was very helpful.
And during that 77 year, you spoke about the sort of experiences you did get just to sort of feel your way around the club. One of them, I believe, was actually sitting in the coach's box with the great Barassi. We know he can dish out a spray to huddle, but do you remember what it was like being in the box with him on game day?
Yeah, I did. I had the chance to do it on a couple of occasions, and I think two was probably more than enough, Eliza, because he was quite acerbic, if you like, and very keen on giving a spray wherever he could, because it was rare. If he didn't speak to you, Eliza, the basic format that the likes of Wayne Schimmelbusch or Keith Gregg or Malcolm Blight would say when I first did play was that if he's not talking to you, then he's happy. But if he does turn in a huddle at quarter or three-quarter time or in the rooms at half time and gives you that stare, you know you're in trouble. So, mind you, everyone would have copped a spray across a certain period, but he did have some of his pets that he did like to spray. But it was a great experience to understand what he was expecting from the players, and it certainly helped in my growth and development.
Were you ever at the forefront of a great spray?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Blighty also was very good at a few little clues. And one thing he did say, look, if things aren't going that well for us as a team and or you as a player, just make sure you're not one of the first ones into the huddle. Try and delay your passage there by, I don't know, doing up your bootlace or grabbing a drink, or but don't stand at the front. But he knew that, and he was very quick of finding where you were in the group. And, in fact, if you were standing at the back knowing you're probably expecting one, it probably made it worse. So thanks for that, Blighty. Yeah.
Good advice for me to take back to my Amos footy career, I reckon, there. But when you did finally make the step up to VFL from Waffle, what was that difference like? Was it a whole nother league? Was it hard to draw from what you'd done at East Perth and take it to that next level?
I suppose two of the biggest memories, Liza, were certainly the size of the grounds, because most of the grounds at that time we played on were council cricket grounds. So Arden Street, Moorabbin, Princess Park, Glenferrie Oval, those sort of ovals were the Western Oval, where the Bulldogs or Footscray were. That was a slightly bigger ground, but they were very much smaller, had turf pitches in the middle. And the actual grounds, the soil was very much a clay-based soil. So, you know, any sort of wet weather created quite a boggy surface. So a lot of the preparation for any new player coming in, particularly in the gym, was to work on your core strength, but also through your hips and your backside and your thighs to make sure you had the strength to hold your ground. Very quickly you sort of put on the right amount of weight or strength because of that. And then the strength of the players you played against, because it was a closer game. There was more contest, if you like. And it was very much a play on your player type of game. There was no open spaces. If there was, it was pretty rare.
So when do you feel you sort of started to feel more comfortable at the level and like you belonged?
The 78, first year, I didn't feel comfortable, but I had a sense that I could play at the level. And that's not hopefully being too big-headed, but I think you just get a certain degree of confidence to know that, okay, you've played some games now, you understand what the coach wants, the style of play, if you like. And most of the team's style of play then was pretty much the same, just win man-on-man contests and try and kick the ball through the middle of the ground. It wasn't the technical side of footy that it is today. So it was through probably, I'd say midway through the first year, 78, that I'd got consistent games and was playing well enough to keep my spot. And so that gives you the confidence to say, well, if you're training well enough and you're training hard enough and playing well enough on the Saturday, which was predominantly when we played, you'd be okay.
And obviously in that year, 78, you sort of come through as this big barrel-chested centre-half back and then got sent forward in a pracky match versus South Melbourne and ended up kicking 6 goals. That sort of versatility to play both, how did that go week to week? Was it a matter of what the other team was showing in matchups, or was it where you wanted to play?
Very good research, Eliza. I'd forgotten that. In all honesty, look, the thing that I found most enjoyable, particularly through my junior footy, was that I was slightly taller in junior footy, so I like playing forward. I think you'd have more of an impact on a game by playing forward in terms of being able to score or create scores. But then when you get to VFL level, you are not the tallest person, and there's plenty of other players of a similar size or bigger. So you soon learn to find your spot. But being a bit versatile, to answer your question, I thought was it was really enjoyable, because you knew that if needed, or if you weren't going so well, you had the ability to go to another position and find your way, find a bit of the footy, or prove that you could be that versatile player. So I actually really did enjoy that. So it's something that I didn't plan on, but because it happened, I just sort of embraced it, and away we went.
And so we spoke earlier about the 1977 grand final, but the following year, 1978, you played in that one. What are your memories of that day on the biggest stage, even though it didn't go your way?
Yeah, no, well, very clear memories, Eliza, if you've got time. It was a beautiful sunny day. Hawthorne North Melbourne. We'd had pretty good matches and rivalry over the previous years. I played fullback. Michael Moncrief was the full forward. 105 or 6,000 people at the G. Coloured toweling hats, true story, were in vogue. I think they're almost back now again. And so they bounced the ball, the roar of the crowd, and all of a sudden within, 15 seconds, the ball comes out of the middle. Moncrief's on a lead, and I just couldn't quite get my fist on the ball. And he takes a mark and kicks a goal. So then, whilst on the ground, having missed the spoil, prior to kicking the goal, a very chirpy voice, Lee Matthews, with that high-pitched, siren-y voice, was saying a few choice words about my efforts and what I could probably expect for the rest of the day. So it wasn't the best start. And then I think he took another mark not long after that, when the Hawthorne centre-half forward, Alan Martello, 2 or 3 minutes later, kicked the ball off the ground and it landed in Moncrief's arms again. So there were some choice words coming over the fence. I felt like I needed a shovel just to sort of dig a little hole and immerse myself in it. But that sort of experience, sort of, you say, well, I need to do a bit better, clearly. And that was the message at quarter time for Barassi. But I sort of settled and found my way, and in the end, I think over the course of the game, I had a couple of reasonable touches that in the end probably squared the ledger.
And you obviously did sort of overcome that, because, you know, 1983 was one of your very fine years, a Brownlow medal, a Sid Barker medal, all Australian side in that year. You know, Brownlow night these days, you know who's going to win it. There's all these calculations. They do round by round who's going to poll the votes. Yeah. Did you know you were favourite heading into that night?
Well, I was one of probably five or six, Eliza, that were mooted as pretty decent chances. And Terry Wallace, the Hawthorne centreman, he'd won most of, or two-thirds of, the media awards, both television and newspaper, radio, etc. So he was probably the favourite. Simon Madden, Maurice Rioli, Terry Danaher, that Orchid player, had wonderful years as well. And as it turns out, through the count, you know, that group of players was towards the top, if not leading. So, and look, you're right. It seemed like it might have been constructed, but the very last vote that was read out, I was one vote ahead of Maurice Rioli. And the last game was a Richmond game. I think I was one vote ahead. And they read the one vote, the two votes, and they read the third vote. And I think Jack Hamilton, reading the vote, said, and three votes, Richmond, M. Pickering. So there was almost a big lull in the room, thinking that Morris might have got up and won with the last votes count on the night. So they thought that might have been constructed widely, but I'm not sure. But wonderful night. Yeah, it was a wonderful night.
And I wanted to touch on State of Origin football as well, because obviously, you know, representing your state is one of the highest honours you could achieve back in those days. And
yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't even alive back then, but I hate Victorian, so it's filtered through generations. How do you sort of remember those games representing your country and just the rivalry that was at stake?
No, I think you encapsulated it really well, Eliza, because 77 was the first one. Leon Larkin was the instigator of it in terms of getting the idea and the concept going, getting the states to embrace it. Played postseason 77. I played out of a back pocket. Didn't see a lot of the ball because WA pretty much dominated. But it was a great, I think it was a great concept, and it lasted as long as it possibly could. And some of my best memories in playing footy at that level are through State of Origin. And there's a couple of times, Eliza, I was chosen to come back and play for WA playing with North, and I hadn't been necessarily in great form. But a couple of those occasions, WA can only pick one player out of the playing currently in the VFL. And so invariably I was chosen ahead of a Jim or a Phil Cracker or that or good player. And so a couple of times, in all honesty, I got a couple of touches in State of Origin and got myself back into a bit of form. But they were great games, particularly when the early 80s, when all the very good players, those the better players of both Victoria and WA played, they were wonderful contests. They really were. High scoring, great games of footy, particularly being on a Tuesday. And I'm not sure we can replicate that again. It'd be great if we get State of Origin back, don't get me wrong, but I'm just not sure where it fits into the current AFL schedule.
And I've got your Wikipedia page up in front of me, and I'm not sure if someone's playing silly buggers with us, but did you play two State of Origin games for Victoria?
Yeah, actually I did, yes. Actually,
you traitor, Ross.
No, Eliza, settle. Because Graham Moss-Mos and a couple of others did the same thing. When there wasn't a West Australian team playing against Victoria, we had the consent from WA to play, represent Victoria playing against Queensland or South Australia, etc. So, yes, I played two games. One was in Queensland. At one stage, I was sitting on the bench with a Victorian jumper. Look, it was very itchy and uncomfortable, Eliza, I will say that. But I was sitting next to, at one stage, Bruce Doole and Jeff Southby on the bench. Now, how's that for an experience? Bruce Doole being the best player I played against when I was a forward. And then the other game was in South Australia against South Australia. And I played on a half-back flank. So David Parker was the coach. So, look, in terms of your footy experience, I know where you're going, but I wouldn't have given that back for anything. I don't know where those jumpers are, Eliza. They're probably eaten by the moths at home.
You're forgiven.
Or the silverfish, I should say.
So then moving on to coming home to WA and playing a major role, really, in the launch of the West Coast Eagles, how did that all sort of eventuate? You know, because you were the main draw card. Everyone wanted to come and play with Ross Glendening and the inaugural captain of the Eagles.
Well, you say that. I'm not sure that's exactly right, Eliza, but lovely of you to say that. Quite simply, midway through 1986, Richard Collis, who was one of the five gentlemen who had initiated the funding for the licence for a club to come out of WA in the VFL, he rang me and said, look, I'd like to get together all the expat West Australians in Melbourne at the time just to address this and be able to give them a face-to-face view on what the concept is, do we think it's going to work, and give it some legs and give it some strength. And Richard asked me, would I assist in getting those guys together? And I said, look, I'd love to, just in terms of, I had no idea whether the concept was going to work, but I thought it's the least I could do to assist him. And we did that at the Sheraton Hotel in Melbourne. And I think we had about 24 or 25 players there, Eliza. And so some left that meeting not sure. Some weren't necessarily interested. And others thought, gee, that might be interesting. And then as the months evolved, not much really in terms of the rest of the season in Melbourne. But then in that second half of the season in Melbourne, I thought, well, I'd like to get back to Perth with Kerry and our two daughters at the time. Kerry's pregnant with our third. And I thought it'd be a nice way to get back to Perth, having spent 10 years at North, get a couple of years possibly at East Perth if that would work, play with East Perth and give back to the club that gave me a chance to start in league footy. But then as the months unfolded, the licence for Indo Pacific or for the West Coast Eagles to evolve all happened. And so it became the choice from Richard Collis again to say, look, it's going to happen. If you are coming back, can you come back? And if you do, could you be the captain? And so quite blessed, Eliza, that it all fell into place. And that's how it happened. And again, I wouldn't change it for anything.
And back to that meeting at the Sheraton Hotel. I mean, we know the sort of names that were in the league over in the VFL at the time, but give the viewers, listeners, I should say, a bit of an insight into some of the guys you were sitting alongside who could have ended up at the Eagles.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Well, there's likes of Ken Hunter, Peter Bezusto, Wayne Blackwell, Nicky Winmar, there's a couple of other guys there that I just want to think back further. Gary Sidebottom. They were quite that sort of ilk of player that had been in Melbourne for 2 or 3 years or so. And then there were a number, of course, back in Perth that were either going to be travelling to Melbourne, like Gary Bucanara or Michael Christian, Craig Stasiewicz, that thought, well, they weren't quite sure about the concept. And understandably, if some of those players had been asked to perhaps play with another Melbourne-based club with the uncertainty about whether this West Australian team was going to happen, they chose to go to the Melbourne club, which is understandably so. But because it was such a new concept, Eliza, it was really difficult to you know, get all the information together, and there were a lot of questions afterwards. So, but again, I think overall, we were pretty happy with the group of players we had in the initial squad of 35, and particularly too to be giving some of the young lads playing in the waffle competition, like Chris Mainwaring, Murray Renstead, a very, very young Chris Lewis, Michael Brennan, that took a player a chance to form a career in the VFL AFL was just as important, I think.
And obviously, going back to that time, you just spoke about some of the players that did end up in the blue and gold, but what was that list build process like? Because we've seen the likes of Gold Coast and GWS come into the league in recent years and the what they've been afforded in terms of the draft. How did the Eagles go about forming a list?
Well, there were a couple of people involved in doing that. Graham Moss, George McKelchick, who was given the opportunity to try and get some players, recruit some players locally particularly, or draw some back from Melbourne. So Phil Narkle, Steve Mille Lacs was another one. I should have mentioned John Anear, of course, Dean Turner, who eventually did come back and play with the club in the first few years. So the opportunity, I think, for some of the younger players that were spoken to, and some of those particularly that I mentioned, and Alex Ashenko, a Laurie Keane, Andrew McNish, who are playing in the Waffle as fairly young players, to step from that competition straight into a VFL competition and be able to stay at home, I think was just a wonderful attraction. And in all honesty, Eliza, I didn't have much to do with a lot of the recruiting. I was certainly asked to perhaps ring a couple or speak to a couple once we got home, post the 86 season in Melbourne. But that was done a lot externally by those that were going to be the officials of the club.
And we spoke about it earlier, obviously bestowed as captain in the first inaugural season of the Eagles. What was your initial thoughts looking at the squad that had been put together? Like, did you think you could achieve something, or were there challenges that were in your way? Talk us through that.
Look, there were some challenges, and it was really tough early doors, Eliza, to get a bit of a gauge on how we'd play as a team. 35, when you think player squads now around 45, and at one stage they're around 50. So to have 35, you only needed a few injuries or have some players that perhaps weren't going quite to make it, and we didn't know that. So until you played a few practice matches amongst yourselves against a group of Waffle players or Waffle teams, or then played the pre-season practice matches that we did and the night games in season. It took a while to get a really decent grasp on how he'd go, but I do know that our last practice match before the inaugural game against Richmond at Subi, we played Essendon at Subiaco Oval, and they were a pretty good team going around in 86 coming into the 87 season. And we did well. And I thought, well, that's a pretty decent indication that a lot of these players aren't too intimidated by, you know, one of these VFL clubs. So that gave me, and I think everyone else, a little bit of a fillip about, well, you know, I think we might be okay. You never know how well you can go or whether you might struggle. But I think that gave us a bit of impetus to say, well, look, if we get our stuff together and execute our skills, because we were pretty skillful, the fitness level, particularly on some of the heavier grounds, and more particularly playing on the odd time we did play at the MCG or again at Waverley. Eliza, Waverley was a big ground, a very heavy ground in the rain belt in Melbourne. It took a while to get used to the size of that ground and being so heavy underfoot. But if it was dryish, and because it was a bigger ground, we liked it. So it, to answer your question, until we played a few more games of the actual season, then we got a better understanding that, yes, we are good enough.
And I want to go back to the launch of the club as well and how that all sort of came together. I heard a whisper, Neil Armstrong. Did you try to get him to the season launch of the West Coast Eagles for the Eagle Has Landed?
Well, I didn't personally, Eliza, no, but that was the forward thinking of the marketing people behind the launch. Not necessarily getting someone on the moon, of course, but some of them thought they might have been in space a bit at the time when they had come up with the concept. But, yeah, there was a lot of bells and whistles and the likes at what was the Merlin Hotel at the time. You know, we all were paraded down a catwalk, if you like, with, again, bells and whistles and smoke bombs going off everywhere. It was an unusual launch. But there was a fair bit of fanfare around it. So thank goodness our early games, we won our first game, we sort of half justified possibly expensively launch.
And do you feel like the Perth public embraced you guys and the West Coast Eagles side?
I think there was a great curiosity around it, and I think also probably enhanced a bit by the state of origin concept that had gone on in the years beforehand, in the early part of the 80s, we touched on before, that people were curious to see what this team could look like, but also the general footy fans, Eliza, who wanted to see Melbourne-based teams come to Perth and play at Subiaco Oval or at the Wacker, as it was for a few games. So I think the footy fan was pretty much geared to go and see, and then those that then got a bit of a sense for this WA-based team became members. So the early crowds were really pleasing. If you're getting 15 or 20,000 people at a game, I mean, the better waffle games through the 80s were certainly in the early or the late 70s when I was playing, you were getting perhaps 12 to 15,000, maybe 18 to 20,000 at a home game at Leeville Oval or Perth Oval or Claremont Oval. So it probably just reconstructed that a bit.
And so what were your some of fondest memories in those early years at the Eagles?
I thought the transient nature of our training facilities, because we didn't have any particularly, so it's not a well-worn story, but it's a factual story where we probably trained on four or five grounds over the pre-season, McGilvray Oval, Aquinas College. We spent in a couple of the early times training out of Guildford College, Guildford Grammar, I should say, to get experience some of the heavy grounds there, down the beach, of course. But not being able to train at Subiaco Oval, we were training at a lot of other venues. So we used our cars a lot as our change rooms, bringing most of our own gear. Hank Glody, who was the property manager for some 25 years at the club, and Bill Sutherland as the head trainer for a similar amount of years at the club, were unbelievable in terms of bringing their vans to whatever ground we were training at, Eliza, whatever venue we were training at. And we'd be strapped sitting on a bench seat or in the car or the boot of a car or getting changed, getting our jumper from Hank or whatever it might have been from his mobile office. But I'll always say, and it's a really great memory, that it was part of the bonding process, Eliza. You just said, well, this is what it is. We don't have a home base per se. Mount Lawley Teachers College, we trained out a bit. They had change rooms there, but they weren't permanent. So you just live that sort of a training regime, and maybe that did help in our travel when we did have to go to Melbourne and move away from our home and travel on the road, that you had a sense of what that might have been like, because that's how we train in the pre-season without being on a plane, obviously.
And then, so retiring after the 88 season, we all know 4 years later the Eagles went on and did what no other interstate club had done, and win the first premiership, dragging it away from Victoria. What was that moment like for you, sort of knowing the input you'd had into that inaugural side?
I think a number of the players that had played in the early years, Eliza, and then saw that that happen. I mean, I think there was just wonderful joy that you had a small part to play in the development of the club, and you know, you were perhaps a groundbreaker or an early explorer, if you like, to probably overplace what we did. But I think certainly there was a great respect for what some of us had done early, whatever it be, whether you'd played one game or 10 games or 20 games, been with the club for 1 year, two or three in the early years, that you wanted to actually see the club succeed. Not every player played as many games as he'd wanted to or stayed at the club for as long as he may have wanted to, but still they'll know that at any time, whilst you weren't a part of any of those, you had a hand, like a lot of people off field, like the Hank Godies and the Bill Sutherlands and that ilk of person who formed a major part of the club, you formed a small part of what the foundation was that built those building blocks for the club to be what it is today.
And so moving into Fremantle, joining the league now, obviously that sort of saw the medal, the famous Glendenning medal named after you, the now Glendenning Allen medal.
Yep.
I know you've spoken about it a lot, but the Gardner Derby incident where it looked like Embley or Sampy was going to win that Derby medal and, of course, got awarded to Gardner in the end. Do you stand by that decision all these years on?
Oh, look, and I'm surprised you brought it up, Eliza, because it's not spoken about very much. In fact, some wag said to me this morning, what are you going to do this week? And I said, well, funny enough, mate, I can't do anything. Not that I would, because Ben will be presenting the medal because it's a Fremantle home game. He went, oh. Look, it wasn't, as it played out, it got a lot of publicity. It wasn't done for that reason, and that is an actual fact. It's just, in my view, the guy who had the better influence, the great influence on the game, was Gardner. Now, there was some hullabaloo for quite some time post that, some comments directed at me that were either unsavoury or not particularly pleasant. That's okay. It wasn't done for that reason. And it hasn't happened again since, quite rightly. I think at the time there were 5 people voting on it, which is way too many people. 3 people vote on it now, Eliza. It's usually a West Australian-based commentator the comments person from the broadcaster, and then 2 other West Australian-based people from radio and or one of the newspapers. So there's a decent balance, and you only need 3 players. So it's been addressed a lot of times, Eliza, and I reckon it's done.
Definitely. And of course, adding the Allen name to the medal.
Yep. That's fantastic.
Like I was going to say, that sort of kicked up a bit of controversy, but you've spoken so fondly of it and the chance to recognise both clubs.
Oh, I think it's a cracking move, and Ben and I have chatted a couple of times, once certainly before it was officially announced, and then on the day it was announced and we got together for a couple of promo shots. I've said to him and very, very clearly that I'm wrapped at that's what was done, because it certainly represents Fremantle clearly, and takes any particular bias or one-sidedness out of it, because we are a two-team town. Frio, what are we in Derby, 51 or 52, Eliza?
I think 53 this weekend.
53, there you go. I knew you'd know. to have Ben doing presenting the Fremantle home game winner, whoever that might be, I think it's absolutely fantastic. And I'm more than happy. And so am I, Eliza. I'd be very happy to say that if at any stage the medal isn't awarded or my name's not linked to it, then I don't have an ego that stretches that far that I'd be concerned with that. But I'm pretty chuffed that it's still there alongside Ben.
Definitely. And so where do we find you these days? How are you sort of spending your post-footy career? Obviously still got a fair link with West Coast.
Yeah, look, I've spent I've just sort of ticked over 10 years working at West Coast in their marketing area. So we're very lucky that a few years ago, it's almost 3 years ago, we moved in this new facility where I'm at the moment in Lathlane at Mineral Resources Park. So like Fremantle have down to Coburn, the progress in footy locally has been unbelievable, Eliza, and I think there's progress made here that I think some of the Melbourne clubs are a little bit jealous of it, and that's not being big-headed. It's just a fact that progress made by both West Coast and Fremantle has been fantastic. And that augurs well for the Derby, clearly Sunday night or Sunday afternoon. But look, I found a niche here at West Coast, great place to work, a cracking job that I have here. There's been suggestion by some of the young people that I need to leave because I bring the average age of the workplace up way too high. We do have some sleep rooms, Eliza, in this facility that are mainly for players and people in rehab, but I do find my way down to them occasionally, just have a bit of a midday nap just to catch up and get the old man going again.
Fantastic. And before we let you go, it would be remiss of us not to get your Derby tip off you. So I'm going to ask you for the winner, the margin, and who you think is going to win the Glendenning Allen medalist.
Oh, you do make it hard on a Friday morning. Look, in all honesty, I think with the players back in for West Coast, Barris, Shuey, Ryan, to give that that level of input I think is important. And conversely, unfortunately, through injury and obviously with the Brayshaw suspension, Fremantle won't have their best team on the park. West Coast won't either. But I think the quality of player and I think the way the two teams played last week, I think West Coast clearly didn't win but found a better range of form over probably two-thirds of the game. Fremantle battled a bit. There were some good signs. On form currently, I'd favour West Coast. I think it's probably going to be a pretty close game. Hard to pick. It looks like it's going to be fine, Eliza, so it should be a nice, open, free-flowing game. I'd say West Coast by 18 points. I'd go Elliot Yeo as the Allen Glendinning medalist, closely followed by I don't know who, because I'm only guessing.
Done deal. And if the Eagles are behind...
I was going to say Michael Gardner, but that would create some...
Too soon, Ross.
Too soon.
So, yeah, if the Eagles are behind, we'll just pray for some lightning and they can turn it around. So
very good. Or some wag suggested they should have lightning in the warm-up and they might start well. Yeah.
Not the worst idea. We'll see how that runs past HR, though. So
good on you. Exactly.
Ross, it's been a pleasure. One of the greats of West Australian football. Thank you so much for your time.
Anytime, Eliza. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you to Ross, and of course, thank you to Mazda and the brand new Mazda BT50, the complete package. Enjoy the Derby.